The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 23rd of November, 2020. On the podcast today, Colin Bird, Chairman and CEO of Galileo Resources. And Colin talks about their exploration progress on their Kalahari Copper Belt project in Western Botswana. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand and Communications, talks about Synergen, or Synergen, as Alan says, on the market, ECR Minerals and Blencow Resources. Plus, as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. I'll be reading out the top 10 most, in fact, top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and top 5 most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of these at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll also see lots of other content. There's an article there on Expedia. There's a video there with Christopher Mills and Paul Hill. There's also an article on alien metals. Plus, our COVID-19 index. Let's have a look at the biggest rises today. It's Silence Therapeutics, up 4.46% to 445. And biggest fall is Avacta Group, down 18% to 111. In fact, Synergen is one of the big fallers as well because the vaccine news comes out, and that's down 9% to 95.67%. Check that out there at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Chairman and CEO of Galileo Resources. GLR sticker there. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. Always nice to talk to you.
Yeah, and you've done a bit of making a bit of progress on exploration there in Kalahari in the Copper Belt. And of course, copper's very hot at the moment, and it's getting hotter and hotter as we talk. So of course, even our government in the UK, so they're trying to bring forward now the date at which they're banning petrol, or the sale of petrol and diesel cars, which means, of course, people are heading towards EV and lots of copper in EV cars. So, first and foremost, before we get into the details of this, Colin, for people not familiar with Galileo, just explain what you're all about there, if you could, what activity you've got going on.
Galileo was, when we founded, it was always an opportunity company, which was looking for really good deals in the right place. And, of course, that took us to several areas, and we've got the Glenova phosphate rare earths project, which is currently, there's quite a few people looking at it, and we're in discussions on that project. There's a further project in Nevada. There's the Kalahari Copper Belt, which I guess we're talking about today, which was our latest acquisition. And of course, there's zinc, our zinc, Star Zinc, in Zambia, which is ready for production.
Yeah,
so it's a broadly based business, very opportunistic, and some really, really good assets, which are now showing legs and showing signs of going very much in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you've done some progress today on exploration here, and you've undertaken a Heliborn EM geophysical survey. So how does that work then, Colin, for people not familiar with how that works? What does it do?
Normally, airborne geophysics and juniors are mutually exclusive because of the cost. But I acquired this, project when I saw a set of results from Sandfire in April, and was aware that certain ground was available. And I'd never seen such good results as Sandfire put out. I mean, I think you were talking about 25 meters of 5.5% copper and 3 ounces of silver. So we acquired all of these assets, and quite frankly, they're big. You know, you look at a map and they'll look little, but boy, they're big. They're 16,000 square kilometres. And there's no way you cover them unless you do it from airborne. And, you know, I used to work in Botswana, and the tradition said, there's too much sand. Once you're off the main run here, there's too much sand. There's probably minerals and copper and nickel and all that down there, but you'll never find it. And then a company called Discovery Metals found it, and they looked through the sand with geophysics, and surprisingly enough, the deposit was only about 60 meters down, high grade, and geophysics works a treat. Mm-hmm. And there was a couple of discoveries from that. The Cupric Canyon came in and expanded the discovery metals. Then there was a company called MOD. They found the T3 by geophysics and of course, drilling. Mm-hmm. And they were acquired by Sandfire for $160 million. Sandfire then wanted more ground and went to the A4 dome, which was discovered by geophysics, and drilled and produced these wonderful results, which they announced on April the 17th. And so we quickly got all of these assets and decided that this was really, and I think the United States Geological Department agrees with me, that this is an emerging copper region. It's not going to be a little mine here and there. So the only way you can do anything with a region is fly it. So bit the bullet and flew it. And the results, you know, the helicopter shows you blips here and blips there, but that's quite frankly meaningless, that raw data. But the raw data has been processed to a certain degree now. We haven't got the final subtle report, which will give us exact depths to conductors and all of that stuff. But what we have, our specialist, and I should say what our specialists are. Our specialists, both of them were involved in the MOD discovery. No, one of them was involved in the MOD discovery, and both of them were involved in the original discovery metals. So they know the area, they know the signature, they know what the geophysics should look like. And quite frankly, we produced a similar set of results, Justin.
Yeah.
The big player now is the dome. The domes are where the near-to-surface material is, the shallow material, high-grade, obviously big distortions, easily visible to an expert. To me and you, it would be like looking at an X-ray. Pretty difficult. But these guys can see. They know what they're doing. And they've identified some really significant conductors in other areas. They've identified what they consider to be a dome in a license called PL40, which has surprised us. And not as much of a surprise, they've discovered these dome zones in around A4, which is the Sandfire area. So that's what our helicopter flying is all about. And, you know, we do say that the final report's got to come out. But that's more of a subtle finalization than the original meaningful interpretation. The meaningful interpretation's largely done, can only get better, and likely to get worse. What we're looking now is the subtleties, you know, how deep is this, how deep is that, and getting a little bit of noise, which may be distorting their ability to get the final analysis. But feel very happy about it and glad we did it. And of course, the next stage is let's get drilling. And so the final report, again, will prioritise our targets.
Yeah. So essentially, preliminary results at the moment, but they're looking very good, but you'll get more data soon, yeah?
I wouldn't say more data, refined data.
Refined data, yeah, sorry, explaining it.
Or subtle data, which will lead to exact as you can when you're sort of making a prognosis on a geophysical prognosis. But, you know, it'll say whether the material is less than 100 metres or more than 100 metres. It will give you a little bit more statement and attitude. But domes they are, and domes they've recognised, no doubts whatsoever.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and of course, you know, copper's doing very well at the moment, and it's going to get going to get hotter, isn't it? You know,
gee whiz. I mean, you know, let's look at the demand side. I mean, demand side, I don't know, there's about 80 kilograms of copper in a new electric vehicle. All of the major car manufacturers are that's I think nearly three times more than the standard vehicle. All the manufacturers now, car manufacturers, and all the and governments are getting very, very positive. So, copper on the demand side is looking very good. And, you know, that's one thing, the EV, but the other thing is just the emergence of countries, people wanting their disposable goods and their material things. That's going to add to copper. Not a very nice word, a system in you know, a sort of transmission system and an infrastructure system in America, which largely needs replenishment, leads to copper. So that's the demand side looks about as good as it can get. Mm. The supply side doesn't look very good. You know, you've got a few social problems in Latin America. 40% of the world's platinum but the world's copper comes from Chile. Chile's got, as I say, its fair share of unrest. And, you know, those big porphyries, you're digging 800 metres to get a 0.42% copper. Even the major boys get frightened about that. So old mines getting expensive to work, getting deeper, the open pits getting deeper, more robust workforces making demands, which quite frankly are difficult to meet, and new mines being shelved. So there's a total imbalance, disconnect between what the demand's looking like and how it's building up over 21, 22, 23, and the ability of the market to supply it. You know, the shortage of new projects on the drawing board is quite frightening, frankly. So, you know, daft as it sounds, I'm actually looking for $9,000 copper in a couple of years' time, and I'm looking for seven and a half by February, March next year. So, the demand is absolutely great, and the supply just isn't looking good.
Well,
and the Chinese have got such a thirst for it. I mean, we're living in a world now, Justin, where everybody's staring into beer glass saying, oh dear, it's not good. And yet, behind the scenes, I see the money, the smart money, the eager money, the anticipatory money, looking to get positions in copper, looking to get positions in zinc, looking to get positions in nickel, which is, again, you know, I keep using that word disconnect, massive disconnect between looking down the barrel of a shotgun and saying the world's coming to an end, and what's really happening for those companies, those governments that can actually look through today's COVID-19 problems. So in summary, the copper future looks good.
And so if we zoom over to the any news out from Stars Inc.?
Oh, Stars Inc's good and ready now. You know, it's in its box, and we know what it is. We know how to mine it. There's a very select area. There's at least 90,000 tons of contained zinc. We're looking quite strongly at the possibilities of shipping the ore direct on a global basis. A lot of interest being shown in that deposit. And there's a company in Australia, who supplied the Chinese for 5 or 6 years with direct ore and did very well, thank you very much. So exploring options, and hopefully won't be that long before we're able to tell the market a bit about our plans.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Well, as always, Colin, to get on that most followed list, if someone's not following you yet, but I'm liking the sound of what you're doing here, give them three quick reasons in summary why they should hit that follow button on your page and add Galileo Resources to their watch list, please.
Well, I think a company which has got a number of assets, all very intriguing, but question is, how are they doing? So the answer is to the question, Stars Inc. look good and ready for the off. The Kalari acquisition is absolutely superb, and the Glenover project is attracting much, much interest, both local and abroad. So you've got a nice suite of assets, poised to add value. Any one of them will add significant value to the company. The price is cheap, the entry cost is low, the market cap can only go one way. There's about 15 reasons. Sorry for that, Justin. Sorry for that, but there's a lot of good reasons why one should keep an eye on this company.
Excellent stuff, Colin. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much indeed.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand and Communications. You're Al.
Good morning, Justin. Yeah, not too bad. Thanks. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm good. Do you know what? I think it's very good that we've had some more news, positive news out on vaccines. And in fact, Matt Hancock, even though I've got a huge amount of respect for him, I don't warm to the guy really. I think he's made some errors and just smiles at the camera in a silly way. But he did say today that this to me was groundbreaking. He said he thinks we'll be back to normal by Easter. Now knows a lot more than, and that's amazing. I think, as you know, I mean, of course, economies won't go back to snap back to normal, but lifestyle, and we've got now got three big companies with vaccines out there with high efficacy rates, and like I said, all you need is regulatory passing from the FDA or our body, and they'll be out rolling out. You know, the majority, of course, next year, but this year, hopefully. Because I think people understand. I understand there's a conflict of interest when it comes to investing, and people are investing in testing stocks, and they tend to take a bit of a knock whenever vaccines come out. But let's be honest, there are people who are terrified of the virus because they have underlying health conditions. And these are the people who go to hospitals and, you know, fill up a hospital bed pretty much. I shouldn't say fill up. I don't mean that in a nasty way. But and then what happens is, you know, if that hospital becomes, you know, too full, then we have to shut everything down, the economy, because we can't have more infections going up because, you know, hospitals will fill up. So this is very good news for hospital, you know, NHS workers, everyone, for hospital staff, because it means our NHS will not be paralysed, you know, which is very good for everyone, you know, whatever you got. To make sure everyone is affected in some way, you know.
That's quite a statement for Mahan God to make, actually. I didn't realise he'd actually said that, which is great news. But also, let's not forget, we do have, the NHS does have capacity, and it has massive overcapacity. In fact, it has 2,000 beds at the Excel Centre, which was, of course, converted. And there are other places up and down the country. So the additional capacity is there. But, of course, the whole process of lockdown has been about, you know, trying to stop the spread, keep the R number at one or below, and of course manage the inflow or the uptick of cases. So with that statement, that's a huge step forward. And yeah, I mean, I've said this before. There are companies working on generating new testing systems. Lateral flow testing, we heard about is being developed over the weekend, so we can get a quick test to assess somebody's status. And probably there'll be an app at some point where you've always got the NHS track and trace app, but there'll be an app that you can carry around which will hold your status. So if you get on a plane, if you go into a restaurant, if you get on a boat or wherever you're going, you can immediately verify your status. And I think there's also talk about, rather than having this extended lockdown period now, once you test, you can then, once you test positive, or you can then retest every day for 7 days. And I think if you're all clear after 7 days, then you can carry on your business as normal. So things are changing. But the prospect of getting back to normal by Easter next year is fantastic. It really is.
Yeah. And do you know what? Part of me thinks, I know right now we're looking through the lens of, you know, a world that hasn't got a handle yet because infections are rising massively in America. And, of course, there's that gap between us.
And Sweden,
where everyone said, oh, that's the way to do it. No, obviously not. But we need extra capacity. I mean, the thing is, we need super capacity in the NHS, over capacity, because then now, the first lockdown, of course, there's so many people suffered who had cancer treatments cancelled, all this kind of people, you know, that suffered. In fact, I read an awful, in a sad story of a lady, and she was in her 20s, I think. She passed away from cancer and she didn't have any treatment over the lockdown period.
That's
and that can't happen again. So we've got to be able to manage those patients and COVID patients. And so we need massive overcapacity. But do you know what? I'm thinking now, if you look at AstraZeneca's results, now two sets of results they had, which is, I think, odd, really, because the first set, they said, if we do give a patient half a dose, a month later give them a full dose, we showed 90% efficacy, which is massive. Now, if we give them a full dose, and then a month later give them a full dose, they achieve 62%. Efficacy, which is, and the figures, there's more figures in the one group than the other group, but put them together, 70% pretty much, which is amazing, because seasonal flu vaccines achieve between 40 and 60%.
Yeah,
and yet exactly. What I don't understand is, we don't have any testing with flu anymore now, don't bother, you know, it's enough herd immunity. So I'm just thinking, if we got three major vaccines already out, they get passed, and they're safe, which they are pretty much, then how long will testing be needed for? Because we don't test for flus.
No, I think I think with flu vaccines, and with any vaccine, it's the efficacy rate is important, but it's also about the side effects, isn't it?
The safety is massive. The safety is brilliant. But let me say one thing, right? So people are saying it does a lot of it. I've seen a lot of people saying it doesn't affect most of us anyway, and you're right. COVID doesn't, and that's the whole point. So if we, you know, protect the most vulnerable, and that doesn't fill up our hospital bells, we can open up the economy, you know? We know it's not that dangerous. People are walking around probably who've had it anyway, don't even know anything about it. So the younger you get, it seems, the less affected you are by it. So I don't think why we, you know, I think I agree. As long as we get those vaccines out there, and AstraZeneca, like I said, doesn't need to be stored at minus 80 or even minus 20. It can be stored at 2 degrees to 8 degrees, and it lasts for months. So I think do you know what? I think the faster we can get this out there, the better, because safety is not an issue completely with any of them. And so the efficacy rates are very good. So just faster we can get out there, better, you know.
Exactly, and there are no nasty side effects. So with that sort of efficacy rate, then, you know, the majority of people will be safe, and that's the most important thing. So we can get on with our lives, get the economy back on track, and also get back to being human beings. You know, i.e., interacting and meeting in pubs and going to the cinema and stuff. You know, and basically rejuvenating the economy, because this has cost trillions and trillions of dollars. It's cost the world trillions of dollars and pounds euros and goodness knows what else. So we have to get economies back on track. We have to get businesses generating money, and there will be some damage. I mean, you know, I saw this morning Croydon Council apparently has gone bust. So
weeks ago,
there's going to be a lot of organizations going to the wall and needing restructuring, but we've got to get back on track as soon as possible. But that's very good news. That's great news.
Yeah, cool. Okay, stocks. What are you looking at, Al?
Okay, so really sort of following on from that, we're talking about companies in the field of providing testing solutions, providing treatment solutions for chronic cases. Synergen, SNG, the Epic Code, of course, this is a company based in Southampton, run by the CEO is Richard Marsden. I saw Richard present at an event a few years ago, was highly impressed. He's former Profile Therapeutics, Genentech, the chairman, Simon Shaw, is also ex-Profile Therapeutics and Gyrus Group, worked for Hambros in a previous life. So, and there's a very impressive board, which also includes, of course, the founder, Professor Stephen Holgate, CBE. So Stephen's very well renowned. So Synergen are a company that undertake research into respiratory diseases, which includes asthma, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, RSV, flu, and so on. And the testing and research work they undertake is in lab and also in humans as well. They have developed a series of biomarkers to help in validation and assessment, and developed treatments. They have a treatment that they collaborated with Australian firm Pharmaxis. They've developed small molecule inhibitors that treat fibrotic disease in lungs, which is one of the key drivers behind, and one of the, if people are suffering from fibrosis or lung fibrotic disease, they are very vulnerable, of course, to COVID. The treatment they have for IPF, scarred lung tissue, has been developed. The company's also worked on a solution called SNG-001, which is an interferon beta treatment, which is delivered through an inhaler. So if you have asthma, I've got mild asthma and I occasionally use an inhaler. If you have asthma, or if you ever had to have a nebulizer, it's the treatment is delivered through that. In March this year, Synergen announced they were to start trialing COVID patients using SNG-01, and of course in July this year they announced the trial results, and there was that incredible day where the share price, I think, rocketed nearly 400% in the day.
Look at the chart now, 420%. It was obviously phase two results, and but amazing. They said it's SNG-1 is 79% lower risk of developing severe disease compared to placebo, and this is in COVID patients. So amazing results there. But look at the chart now, though. So it's a tree. It seems it's odd because lots of vaccines are needed and lots of solutions are needed. But this has had a bit of a hammering since they've done a fundraise, haven't they? But they had a bit of hammering since, you know, that result. But they've gone up to 240. Now it's back to like 97 pence, which is right by the gap. When it gapped up on the 27th, the gap was pretty much at 85 pence. And this that gap seems to be a bit of a support there, you know, on the chart.
Yeah, There is definitely support there, and I think also the also of course they raised 80 million as you rightly said, but that was raised at £1.75. So I would say that's very much the next level for the stock to be looking at. But I think what happened is we had the positive trial data, and also of course patients in that trial. They said patients who received SNGO1 were also more than twice as likely to recover if they were COVID patients, so that's also highly significant too. So they developed a managed access program with Clinigen to develop the inhaler version during September and treat hospitalized patients. But at the same time, they of course announced an interim loss of 5 million. So I think a lot of investors probably at that stage looked at it and thought, well, hang on, we've got this market valuation of, 280, 300 million or wherever it was then. And of course, the company's not actually turning over any money. So I think that's probably what held the share price back. They then raised the 80 million, and this, of course, is to fund the phase three trials in over 900 COVID patients and ramp up production to get to the point where they can deliver 100,000 treatment courses each month in 2021. The research and the trials and the conclusions were also featured in the Lancet publication, which is highly regarded throughout the medical world. And the clinical trial data. So we're now at the point, I think, where I think investors are looking for evidence of the sales, evidence of the increase to start hit the bottom line and to materialize on the balance sheet. We know the company are now well funded. That's great. But the company now needs to take the next step. But a very important step forward in treatment. And, we're hearing, we're hearing about the vaccines, which is wonderful news. Everyone's going to get back to normal, but patients will still develop chronic symptoms from COVID, and this will last because, of course, the virus will mutate. So, treatment solutions such as Synergens will be critical as we go forward and as we start to emerge from the COVID crisis.
I like to use Synergens. It's quite almost European the way you say that. Synergen.
Well, I think, of course, it's respiratory, so the emphasis on air, I think it's...
Yeah, but air, but you say Synergen.
Synergen, yeah. Synergen. But if you actually look at the logo, the Syn and Gen is in darker blue, but the air is in lighter blue. So I think it's Synergen with the emphasis on air. So play on words. Anyway, Synergen, whatever.
So it's good. Do you know what was annoying me? I had Vadim Alexander, head of healthcare at SP Angel, come on a weekly basis, and he's talked about these for a while. And my son's got a chronic lung condition, so we've been down to the hospital quite a few times in Southampton. And you see, and I thought, and I knew about Synergen and their trials and all that. So, and I was going to take a position. I know they're quite a risky stock when you go through clinical trials. They're always quite risky, and a lot of cash burn goes on. And they're a small company, so I didn't really take any position. But I regretted it on the 20th of July when they raised by 420%.
I think we all did.
Oh, unbelievable. But anyway, I wish them good luck because, of course, they're doing good work there. And if you look at what they raised, I'm trying to find out what it was. But the raise, a mark of a successful company is when they can raise money at a higher level than they previously did, pretty much, because there's more interest, the share price is going up. And I think their previous raise was something like ridiculous compared to what they did now. So phenomenal amount of raise at that price. It was like, I think they raised previously, was it 10 million or something, 14 pence, something like that. And so it was multiples of what they raised, multiple in the price. Cool, that's Synergen. Wish them good luck there. A bit of support on the chart there. What's next, Al?
Well, it was 80 million, and of course, there was an open offer of 7 million, so it was 87 million in total. So,
previously to that, it was nowhere near that, it was amazing.
It was on the floor,
Cool. Yeah. What's next, Al?
Okay, so one other byproduct of COVID has been a lot of people living in cities are reassessing their lifestyle and way of life, and of course they're moving out to the country. And ironically, where I live in Seaford, Seaford has been featured regularly in the press over the past few weeks as one of the most desirable places to live.
That's because you moved there, Al. Just follow Alan Green. He knows.
Blaze the trail. Get down here. It's a lovely town. And I mean, where we are, the Germans on their way back from bombing London during the Second World War jettisoned a lot of bombs on the way back. So some of the architecture in the middle of Seaford is interesting because you've got some really old buildings and then you've got some newer buildings alongside. But that's just thank the Germans for that. But nonetheless, it's a beautiful spot. You know, we're right here by the Seven Sisters Cliffs and the iconic Cookmere Valley, so it's a lovely spot. But my wife and I were walking the dogs the other day, and we saw a house around the corner on with a local agent. Of course, we tried to look at it on Rightmove, couldn't find it, and found it on the market, which I'm going to talk about now. And of course, we spoke about on the market a few weeks ago. OTMP is the epic code. Shares have traded as high as 135 pence on the year, as low as 25p. Rightmove, of course, is the leading property property portal, so it's been used for years, and it's got a commanding market position. And if you look at Rightmove has a market cap of some $5.5 billion, shares are trading fairly healthily at 631 pence. But revenues have sort of are starting to slip, and as Rightmove's revenues start to slip, on the markets revenues are starting to rise. And indeed, we've seen in the past few weeks the share prices started to push higher. But really, if you look at Rightmove, the Rightmove revenues fell 34% on the half year to 94 million. Operating profit fell 43% to 61 million. And yet, we're seeing on the market start to develop revenues, start to build volume.
My GIF I sent out on Twitter on last week.
Your GIF? No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I put a GIF out on about Rightmove versus on the market, right? And I said, look at this valuation difference here. Rightmove is valued at 62 times that of on the market. And yet their revenue is only 9 times that of on the market. 62 times, it's nuts. When you look at their website traffic is only 5 times that of on the market. On the market's growing quickly, and traffic is, and Rightmove is pretty much stagnant. They only have a quarter more estate agents on their books than on the market. And like I said, keep remembering, this is valued 62 times more than on the market. Also, on the market, like you said, is growing. The revenue for the last 6 months of Rightmove dropped by 34%, whilst on the market grew by 28%. And I think essentially what's very telling here is estate agents are tired of paying the fees for Rightmove. They pay like £1,000 per average per office, whereas on the market, it's a third of that, pretty left of the third, £300 per office pretty much. And yet, 65% of the shares of on the market now are owned by estate agents. So, who's your lawyer? If you're an estate agent, right, who are you going to put properties with first? The person you own shares in and you pay a third less of, and that's why they do these new and exclusive. And they come out, like you said, I've set two filters, exactly the same on the market and exactly the same as on Rightmove. Same in a budget, same area, and same amount of bedrooms I'm looking for. And I often get new properties coming out and on the market about 24 hours before Rightmove, because estate agents are listing them and on the market before Rightmove, because they know they have to be on Rightmove because it's dominant, but they begrudge it because they have to pay so much for it, you know?
Well, I think that's. I think on the market has said that once the take up is completed, because of course they're bringing agents in by offering them shares, they'll have something like just under 4,000 estate and lessee agents operating nearly 7,000 offices worldwide nationwide as shareholders. So that's a key element in the strategy going forward. And the thing is, of course, for an estate agent, If you're in a market that's moving fast, which of course the market is at the moment, you want to be able to sell stuff quickly. So it was quite something my wife and I walked around the corner, looked at this property, couldn't find it on Rightmove, found it on the market. So I think there is a sea change taking place.
I'm invested in them. That's why I think that. And I just think that strategy of having the state agents on your side is the winning strategy. And like I said, if you look at their traffic, if you look at their revenue, the growth, it's going in the right direction, whereas now Rightmove is stagnating. And like I say, it's begrudged paying the fees. They have to pay the Rightmove. You know, absolutely begrudge it.
So Rightmove's value, you know, Rightmove half year results were revenues of 90 just under 95 million. On the markets were just over 10 million, up 28% from on the market, down 34% for Rightmove. So there's not, okay, there's a discrepancy
but
there.
But do you know what's happening though? Originally, a couple of years back, to try out the portal, a lot of estate agents would give them a free trial, you know? And back then, of course, you have to have the stock and you have to have the eyeballs on your website. So at the start, it wasn't, you know, their leads weren't that good at the start, let's say 3 or 4 years back. But now, their leads are comparable with, you know, the cost per lead is comparable with Rightmove. So it's literally, it's actually makes economic sense to list with on the market. Yeah. And so it's catching, you know, it's just doing, I draw, look at that valuation gap between, you know, 90 million and 5.6 billion. That's ridiculous.
Well, either Rightmove is massively overvalued or on the market is massively undervalued, but I suspect the...
A bit of both, meet in the middle.
Yeah,
you know?
I suspect it's somewhere in between, but even so, you know that means a huge increase. And also, just to pick up on your point, I mean, estate agents, you know, they have to move stuff quickly. So if they try something and it doesn't work, then they'll move elsewhere or they'll just go back to what they were doing. So they're using on the market, it's working, and it's working as well as to the point now where you find stuff on the market, you don't find it on Rightmove. But also, going back to the free listings, also earlier in the year, in order to keep the business going, they were offering a lot of free listings to agents during the COVID crisis, you know, so agents would continue to use them. And of course, some of those free listings will now start to convert into paid listings because the agents are getting value. So the revenues will increase. But I think, there's a great future for this business. And if it starts to redress the valuation gap with Rightmove, then shares are going to motor rapidly. And I think the agents will be delighted too, because they'll have an extra source of profit.
Yeah, and also, if you, like, for example, if you meet in the middle, if they did meet in the middle, for example, so you add the market cap of Rightmove to the market cap of On the Market, and then divide that by two, which is the average, that's 2.8 billion, right?
Mm.
So that is, you know, still, you know, 2.8 billion divided by, you know, 90 million, that's still a long way to go. It's, what was that? How much is that?
So yeah, that's...
In fact, let's just do the maths here. Let me just divide that by 90. I'm a bit thick with maths. I always need a calculator, which is not a bad thing. So, I mean, so it's 31 times its valuation right now,
yeah,
of course. So, of course it is. 62. Half of 62. Yeah, so, there's plenty of upside here, I think. You know, growing, so...
Huge amount of upside. Yeah. That's the thing. You know, it's going to be somewhere in between. But you know, a 5.5 billion valuation versus a 90-100 billion valuation. Yeah, there's it's a very exciting time for this platform. And you know, Rightmove, the market leader, but market leaders are there to be shot down and to be superseded. So I think On the Market are well on the way to doing that. Mm-hmm. Exciting times.
Marvelous stuff. What else? Anything else?
Okay, want to talk about ECR Minerals. Of course, ECR Minerals, just a quick recap. They are, we put out an article this morning, which is also published on Vox. So if you go to my profile on Vox, you can look at that and actually click on the link there. But ECR Minerals are one of the incumbent developers in the Victoria region in Australia. And Victoria, of course, is in the south, and there is a huge gold rush going on there at the moment with a number of companies applying for licenses and developing. The difference is with ECR Minerals, they have been there for some years, and they have a number of licenses down there. They 100% own the two key licenses, which are plumb in the middle of prime territory. The Creswick license, which is it's situated within what's called the Dimocks Main Shale, and this is a geological feature that runs to the south of Creswick through the Ballarat Gold Mine Centre. Ballarat is, of course, operated by Lions Gold, and it's a very fertile region for gold mining. ECR undertook some work there last year, and they undertook some testing across the Kresik territory, and pulled some very nice examples of gold nuggets out of the ground. In fact, the best sampling they took there was 80 grams per ton, which is a pretty impressive level. Dr. Dennis Arndt, who's a consulting geochemist there, highlighted in a report the significant gold exploration potential at Kresik, and also the nature of the mineralization at there, which was he referred to as nuggety, which I thought was wonderful. The second territory, which is 100% owned, is Baylisten, and Baylisten is close to the Fosterville gold mine, which of course is world famous. It's the highest producing, or it produces more gold in Australia than any other mine. And is owned by Kirkland Lake Gold, a Canadian company, and the Kirkland Lake Gold share price has absolutely gone ballistic over the past few years. So something like 2,200% increase since it acquired the Fosterville gold mine, and also the mine itself had the annual gold production at Fosterville has jumped by some 300-400% 350% between 2014-2018. So the Baylisten territories, there are a number of territories. One of them, the historic reserve 3HR3 is called. The company have their own drilling rig now. The rig is actually in transit to commence drilling at HR3, and we'll have some news on that in the near future. The company announced that last Friday. Also completed some soil sampling work at the Cherry Trees prospect, throughout last year, ECR has undertaken. It undertook a funding round. It raised $600,000 in July. It's raised just under $400,000 from warrant exercises, and also sold the Avoca Timor and Maumbal licenses earlier in the year to Fosterville South Exploration. Got $500,000 in the bank straight away from there. So the company fully funded for all the drilling activities ongoing. They have, of course, been talking about a farming agreement or similar with a number of potential partners, and talks are underway in Kresik at present. So we will hear something on that in the near future. But a few months ago, they also announced that they were buying licenses, or they'd applied for licenses in eastern Victoria, in an area called near an area called Bruton, or Bruthen rather. These are three licenses, the reason they apply for the licenses is because their principal geologist, Dr. Rodney Boucher, was born and raised in the area and has an in-depth knowledge of the region. So Craig Brown, who runs ECR, is a very cautious guy, and for him to make a statement like that indicates to me that they're obviously fairly confident in what they have there. So we're on the cusp with ECR of an awful lot of news in the next few months, and shares are currently trading at just under 2p. Gives it a market cap of about 11 million. So it's at this point, if there are any fines, if there's any news on joint ventures or developments, we could see, well, who knows? We could see a move like Greatland Gold when it's agreed it's. It's a farming agreement with Newcrest Mining. So I think there's so much activity down there. Other companies, of course, include Power Metal Resources and Red Rock Resources, Fosterville South, I've already mentioned, and a host of local companies operating in the region. The Australian or the government in that area are handing out licenses at the moment. And they're also, in most cases, taking a stake in each individual license that they hand out. So if there is an ongoing if there is a fine, then they get to participate in the stuff that comes out of the ground.
Marvellous stuff. Cool. Anything else, Al?
Yeah, just very briefly, Blencow Resources. We've spoken about Blencow before, so it's still on the exploration front. Blencow, of course, has the graphite project in Uganda, and is very close to a JORC resource number that will be issued very shortly. The company just announced this morning that two directors, Cameron Pierce and Sam Quinn, had each exercised warrants, and as a result, a further $70,000 has gone into the company accounts to obviously go towards the R&D and research and development and the work to bring the resource up to JORC standard.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Yes, I've had Mike on the podcast quite a few times, and he's got a lot of experience, Mike Ralston. So
Mike Ralston's a very knowledgeable guy, very knowledgeable. So more news on that in the near future. Looking forward to that.
Lovely stuff. Cheers, Al, and we'll speak you next weeky.
Cheers, Joss. Speak you next weeky.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, Union Jack Oil, down 20% there at 0.12. At four, Catenay Innovations, up 5% to 3.05. At three, Imya Pharma, that's up 6.7% to 13.63. At two, Alien Metals, down 8.2% to 1.4, just on a fundraise. And at one, Omega Diagnostics, down a smidge there, just below 1% at 56 pence. Top five most liked RNSs. In fact, let's look at the top five most read as well, just to sort of match that together. Some people like, some people read, some people don't react. So it gives a good comparison. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. Union Jack Oil, West Newton Drilling Operations Update. At four, Alien Metals, raised 2.5 million for exploration activities. At three, Blenka Resources, and I mentioned that in the podcast, director, warrant exercise and purchase of shares. At two, Expediator, trading statement. They're up today about 19%, I think. Well, it's 16% right now. And at one, first commercial sale of concentrate confirmed at bait supply by Vast Resources. Most viewed, actually, is, in fact, that second most viewed, the Vast. Avacta Group is the first most viewed, but it's obviously dropping on that because I think it's still a way off till they get that testing sorted. Third most viewed is 4D Pharma, and Cineworld also fifth most viewed. Anyway, that's it. I'm just mumbling on here to myself. I forgot then. I'm still recording. But thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.